Welcome to Catalytic Leadership, the podcast designed to help leaders intentionally grow and thrive. Here is your host, author, and leadership and executive coach, Dr. William Attaway.
I'm so excited today to have Jay Agner on the podcast. Jay is the CEO of JDAQA, a software testing agency with $2 million in annual recurring revenue. He's the father of five, a student pilot, a hockey player, and an amateur astrophotographer. He also hosts a podcast called The First Customer, where he interviews successful founders about how they got their first customer. He went from the 9 to 5 to consulting to the freedom of running his own business that has grown from a one-man software testing consultancy to a seven-figure testing agency powerhouse with 60-plus employees. His family is also currently being featured in a documentary about time management and how successful people spend their time. Jay, I'm so glad you're here. Thanks for being on the show.
Dr. William, how are you, buddy? I'm glad to see you again. We did our pre-interview, and I've been waiting to talk to you again since. It's great to talk to you, man.
I've been looking forward to this, too. This is going to be a great conversation.
Yes, sir.
I want to start with you sharing a little bit of your story with our listeners, particularly around your journey and your development as a leader.
I don't know when that happened. I feel like, you know, it comes in spurts throughout, you know, somebody's life. And then maybe it kind of just flips on when you get the right opportunity and you get the right timing. And you know, I think we talked about it before, too. It's like anybody who says timing isn't a big part of it or luck isn't a big part of it, I think isn't really being honest with themselves. So, I did lead stuff. I was a lead at different companies. But really, when I started to realize I could pay other folks to work for me, I had to shift my mindset to being, you know, a leader of people, which I love to do now. And I kind of identify myself as being a leader of people. Like some people like to do that. Some people like to do the hands-on stuff. Some people like to do design stuff. Like I like to lead people. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, I can't really point to anything specific in my past that I would say like that was the moment, but, you know, surely being pushed into it a little bit helped when I realized like, hey, I could hire somebody else to, you know, for $25 an hour and the client's going to pay me $50 and then I'm making $25 an hour to just make that connection and manage everything. I'm like, that's what I want to do. And the light bulb went off. So I think doing the hard work of consulting multiple jobs while having multiple jobs was like, you know, enough for me to realize like, all right, this leadership thing is fun. It's exciting. And it doesn't feel like work for me, right? I mean, that's the old cliche. Like if it doesn't, you know, it won't feel like work, you won't work a day in your life. So that's kind of how I like to lead.
You know, it's interesting to listen to a little bit of your story there that you can't point to a specific time. And I would imagine if we were to go back a ways toward the beginning of your journey, you would not have predicted it was going to turn out exactly like it has.
I think, and I ask people on my podcast, I always say, you know, where'd you grow up and did that have any impact on you being an entrepreneur? And I ask that because it's a very interesting question to me because I wonder that about my mom was an entrepreneur. Like she ran a newspaper and like did like this local directory and like she would like barter for stuff. Like she would like give people an ad in the newspaper and then they would give her like, you know, horse feed for like a year, whatever the hell it was, like whatever the thing was, like she would do. And, you know, I was around that growing up and I had like a little business doing websites for her, her people that she had an advertising agency. So when they needed a website, I would make it at like 12 or 13 years old. And like, that was kind of my first, wow. Just realized like that was cool. Like that was a good, you know, being able to pick up those projects and do them and make extra money at the time was like super cool to me. So, I think it has a lot to do with environment, but, and then I went to the 9 to 5 world for years and just did my job and executed and did what I was supposed to do. And like I said, it was leading some capacity, but I think it's really circumstance that pulls out leadership sometimes. And like, you don't know it's there and, you know, maybe you grind really hard for a long time and then eventually it comes out.
You know, it's a different skill too. You know, I mean, you know, you can work the 9 to 5, you can execute for other people and help to build somebody else's vision.
Right.
But when you step into your own thing, when you start your own business and then you have to hire other people to help you with fulfillment, you realize real quick It's not about what you do anymore. It's not about you using your gifts, your skills, your passion. It's about learning to lead a team.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
How has that shift been something that you have encountered and dealt with? Because that's not easy for everybody.
I think it all kind of came together when I realized that no problem in the business or even in my life is anybody else's fault. Mm. Like, it's very easy, and we all know the bosses that point fingers, or like, you know, middle managers that point fingers or whatever. And, you know, there was some issues, always been issues, you know, with business. You figure stuff out, you have problems, you solve it, whatever. But like, I think once I finally realized that, like, I hired that guy, or I was in charge of the process for the people that hired that guy. You know, and the further abstracted you get up in the chain, like, the more you lose responsibility. But at the end of the day, like, it all goes back to you. And like, that was the biggest, I think that was the biggest moment for me when I realized, like, okay, if that guy didn't do what he was supposed to do, that's my fault. And, and running a business is easy to just say, like, everything kind of comes back to you, but you really have to, like,
yeah,
own why that was and own. And I think people appreciate that in an organization. Like, it's not like lip service where I just say it on meetings or something. Like, I hope everybody in my team knows that, like, I'm not going to throw anybody under the bus. Like, we're going to figure out what happened. Like, it goes back to me, and I will help remedy it. Right. Like, I'm not going to put anybody on an island and, like, you know, or some people not a fit. Sure. But again, like, that goes back to your hiring process and, like, learn, like, how do you read people during an interview, and what are the questions you're asking, and what does your onboarding look like? And, like, all these different things. And we've grown and learned along the way. And it's, you know, I'm lucky to have a really strong partner in my COO that, like, kind of handles the execution side of things and lets me just be the goofball that I am and try to, like, figure this thing out. And she's been fantastic along the way. And we've grown this thing to a pretty, you know, good spot just because we've listened to our people and our, you know, and our clients, I think.
Well, and I think that is such an underutilized leadership skill, listening.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that I love about how you're describing that is, you know, poor leaders do point fingers and they do shift blame unless it's time to take the credit. And those poor leaders will often then be like, well, no, I led that. I'm the responsible.
Right.
You know, and one thing I love in our pre-interview was you talked about this and how letting other people shine is core to who you are as a leader.
Yeah. And I honestly, I feel like the biggest personal growth I've had is doing that not at work, like in like normal family life.
Yeah.
Right. Like, you've got in-laws and you've got your parents and you've got friends and family and people in the community. And it's like, it's so easy to just be like, you know, trying to bring up the point that, like, well, I helped with that, or like, I was really, and like, it doesn't do anybody any good, right? Like, it's like, you, like, let your wife, or let your family, or let your kids or your in-laws, let them, you know, not just feel like they had a win, like, let them have the win, like, just be part of it and support them and whatever. And like, it all just kind of comes back anyway. Like, it's, I think that's the trick to it, right? Is like, it's kind of like sales. Like, if you're just there to support and to help and to do whatever, it's going to work. Like, you're not going to be this overly, you know, annoying salesperson. You're going to be a guy that's out there solving problems. I feel like in my personal life, in work life, just really trying to take a step back and, like, your credit will come. Like, people will recognize you. Like, people will think you're, you know, whatever. But not if you're going after it. Not if you're trying to get that credit. Yeah. You're going to look like, and the worst, I think, is the passive aggressive type. Like, that will point fingers and blame and take credit, but do it in a way that's, like, very passive aggressive in a work environment. Like, your boss will, it was one boss who would say, like, you know, I'm not the smartest guy in the room, but, like, this is what I think. And it would be like this kind of, like, around the bend way of saying that everybody in the room was wrong except for him. And it's like, everybody saw through it, and it was, like, so annoying. And it just, I've tried to pick up pieces of that I hated when I worked for places and make sure I do the opposite, right? It's like, you know, do like, the, you know, think about what an idiot does and, like, do the opposite. Like, that's kind of like my goal in life, I think.
So. I love that. Think about what an idiot does and do the opposite.
That's it.
That's brilliant. That, you know, that willingness to share the credit or give the credit to somebody else. that willingness to say, I'm going to encourage somebody else to be the hero here and not try to hog this for myself. That reflects a maturity. And I'm guessing that's not where you started.
No. That takes a long, it takes a lot, man. It takes being married for, you know, over a decade and like having a bunch of kids and having a business and stuff. I don't think it's a weird, I think about it all the time. Like where does experience like kick in? Like where, like at what point are you kind of like, and then I think eventually like everybody that has experience realize like, you know, nothing. And like, you have so much to do. Like it's that you're never going to be this ideal version of yourself. But if you're going for it, then like you're doing better. You're day by day, you're improving and making other people happy. And I think eventually you start realizing like making other people happy, making your clients happy, making your employees happy, making your family happy. Like that's the important stuff, right? It's like, yeah. I don't know. Do I like to go do my hobbies? Absolutely. But like I take care of everything else first and then, you know, kind of take care of myself. And like I said, the credit comes. Like people notice, you know, my family knows that like I'm there and my employees know, my clients know. So, it's like a weird, like selfless, but not selfless thing. Cause you get fulfilled from like not being selfless. So it's like, at the end of the day, it does come back and you know, everybody's happy.
And trying to ensure that you're first, trying to ensure, you know, hey, I'm not, it gives you the exact opposite result.
Yeah.
I've seen that to be true as well. I mean, next month, my wife and I will celebrate 26 years of marriage.
Congratulations.
And I'll tell you what, man, that's a lot of years of my life as I'm thinking back on that. And there's so many things I've learned that I would never have known in year one,
right,
or year two, or year three.
Or would you have listened in year one or year two to your future self telling you, hey, man,
right,
this is the stuff that, so it's like, where, at what point in your journey do you receive that?
Yeah.
Like when would you be, you know, receptive to that sort of really good advice that like future you was trying to tell you? And you're like, dude, you're an idiot. Like, I'm not listening. Like, no way. Like, I'm not going to listen to that. I think about that too. Is like, where do you become, cause you can listen to stuff. Like, where do you listen and apply it? Like in your life,
right.
Like, there's some point where that starts to kick in. I think it takes longer for guys, by the way.
Absolutely, 100%.
I think it's in the late 20s. Maybe you start to get it a little bit, which is why younger, you know, impressive entrepreneurs and stuff are like even more impressive to me, because like they're getting it earlier than I got it, for sure.
Yeah, me too. You know, I often talk about how important evaluation is. And I say that, you know, I don't believe experience makes you better. We have this idea that the more experience you have doing something, the better you get. I don't think that's true at all. I think evaluated experience makes you better.
Mm-hmm.
And it's when it's evaluated and reflected on and you adapt and change. That's when you get better.
Yep, I agree.
Too many people have 20 years of experience, they think. Really, they just have 1 year of experience that's been repeated 20 times.
Right.
They've just done the same things the same way. They're not adapting, changing, growing, learning.
Mm-hmm.
And looking at your journey, I love that teachable spirit that you have, because that idea that I want to grow, I want to learn, I want to get better, you know, that seems so evident from what you're describing from your journey so far.
I just get bored, man. I get really bored. Like, I get really bored, like, doing the same stuff over and over again. And I get, the older I get and the more experience I get running a business, the less tolerance I have for things that I shouldn't be spending time on. So, like, you know, I call myself a delegation evangelist. Like, I totally believe that there's somebody in your team that can probably do it better than you're doing it, and you should be off doing something else. And I think that's like business coach 101. I think like that's their big sell, to be a, you know, and I, you know, you do a business coach. And I think, I don't have a business coach, but all the ones I've talked to in my podcast and all the ones I know in my life, like that's kind of just core to it. It's like, I think just having so much to do all the time and like wanting to, like, I mean, just even my hobbies alone are just like ridiculously, like you have to learn a lot. You have to constantly, like, being a pilot, like I still haven't got my license yet. I still have to, you know, keep working on that. I do astrophotography stuff, which is like an insanely complex hobby. And I'm not the smartest guy in the room. So like, I'm constantly like trying to learn things and like you know, processing techniques and then like acquisition techniques and gear stuff and like building communities. And so, yeah, I think that always wanted to learn, or I'll see something that's cool. Like I saw something on LinkedIn the other day that I don't know if you saw it, but that guy, he had a video of himself and then he was running a program that was voiced by David Attenborough, the AI David Attenborough.
Yeah. Yeah.
That could analyze, it would take a screenshot every 5 seconds of the video because it's not fast enough computationally to do a full video yet, which I'm sure is in the near future. But it would take a still screenshot. It would ask ChatGPT via API in the back end, like, hey, in the voice of David or in the character of David Attenborough, tell me what this image is, right? What's on the screen? And then it would pipe it to this other thing called 11 Labs, which is another AI voice tool that was loaded up with David Attenborough's voice. So it was literally like narrating a live video of this guy, like, you know, in the Dave Attenborough voice. And I was like, that's super cool. Like, I love that. I like just what's behind that. So like, I've spent the weekend like figuring out like, how do I do that? And like built a little thing that was like kind of working, you know, that could do the same thing. And like that, just seeing stuff that's cool and interesting, exciting, going and doing it, I think is just part of keeping things fresh. Yeah. Always trying to learn something, man. I'm never bored. I don't even know what that would look like, honestly.
Can't imagine you are bored. I mean, in addition to all of those things that you've described, you have five kids.
I do have five kids.
You're married with five kids. How do you balance like a family, a wife, five kids with running a multi-million dollar business?
It's all just blends together at this point. I don't think it was like that forever. You know, I mean, I did my consulting thing and after hours I would work and then I built the business up. But now it all kind of just like, there's no like start of the day and end of the day. It's just like, which I mean, some people could probably handle and some people probably couldn't, like they need that rigid kind of like framework. But yeah, man, but I've always kind of been like that. Like I've always been like, if my wife needed me, like I was going to figure out a way to leave work. Like if I was going to, you know, if I needed to work remote, cause my daughter was whatever, I would figure out a way to do it. Like, it was always like not an option for me. And it's just, it's a definitely, I live the, ask for permission lifestyle, like my entire life. And I continue to live that way. And like, it opens up a lot of cool experiences and get to do a lot of things that like I think people would just be standing there like wishing they had done something. So like I always try to do that. It's like a goal of mine to like, if there's something that makes me nervous or something that like other people are nervous to do, like in a room full of people and they won't go talk to them, like I want to just like, I'm terrified and I don't want to go talk to that person, but like I try to make myself, you know, get over those like invisible barriers to like do something cool and different. So long answer is just, you know, I don't separate the two. I don't separate business and kids and whatever. It's just like, I have a calendar, work calendar. I have a family calendar. I have a personal calendar. I have a couple executive assistants that like literally manage that calendar for me and are like fantastic. And they're like my extension of my arms and legs. They like will ask me if, you know, hey, it looks like you have something double booked or you have something coming up next week. Like, we know you've got to do parent teacher conferences in the afternoon. Should we cancel this stuff? Or like, if I'm sick and I'm like, guys, I need you to clear out today and tomorrow, then like they reschedule everything. So I think having that help now is massive. But, you know, I've always kind of just made family first, which is like such a cliche thing, but it's just true. Like I mean, my kids don't know a world where I'm more than like 10 feet away from them. Like my office is in my converted garage that I've made into an office. Like they don't, used to be in the basement where their play area was. Like they don't know a world where I'm not around, which is good and bad, right? I mean, my 7-year-old daughter is like ridiculously attached to me and she's like, you know, doesn't like me to leave for more than 5 minutes. But yeah, I think having the rigid separation, and so, like I said, some people can't do that. Some people, it drives them nuts. Some people need that, like, and I certainly block off time for work and I have my stuff and everybody kind of knows, but it's having a strong partner. You know, I mean, my wife, like, it took a while, I think, for us to kind of balance it out. And like now she's starting her own business. So it's like becoming a little like I have to balance you know, keeping my mouth shut, trying to help, like, you know, which is unsolicited, you know, help, I don't think is ever a good thing. But, you know, whenever she needs me for like advice on business stuff, I try to do that. So yeah, it's, I think having a really strong partnership, and just being able to be flexible. And people are way more forgiving, I think, to like reschedule stuff and do it than like people assume. Yeah. They would like, they'll like not go to like their kids, whatever, because, you know, they have some meat. I'm like, dude, I can't, like, you know, something came up. I'm always honest. That's another thing. Like, I always make sure I'm honest in my reschedules. Like, yeah, my executive assistants, I think, have worked with other people who like maybe are less than honest.
Yeah.
And I'm like, don't say that. Like, please don't tell them that, like, you know, something bad, like, just don't, like, we got to just say, and maybe, you know, softer version of it. But if, you know, like, you know, hey, he's got to take his wife's grandparents to the hospital, like, whatever it is, like, I would rather tell the truth and just be like, and people 99.9% of the time, I had one guy on Podmatch that was like pissed off because I rescheduled him a couple of times, and he was like, you know, at this point it's just insulting. And I'm like, all right, dude, like, totally get it, like, not a big deal, sorry, like, maybe you're not a great fit. Ironically, his automation on LinkedIn, I guess, connected with me, and now he sends me like automated messages about how we should work together every, like, you know, week or two. I have just let that go. I haven't said anything, but if he's watching, you know who you are. So anyway, super long-winded answer, sorry about that.
No, that's great. Yeah, I think that's such a challenge for a lot of people. And I love the model that, I don't know that I've heard anybody talk about it quite like that, Jay. I mean, this idea of it just kind of seamlessly blending together, it dovetails with something that I often teach. And that is that we have this idea that our lives are compartmented. It's an idea that we got from the ancient Greeks, that you can, you know, wall off different parts of your life. And what happens at work doesn't affect what happens in your marriage, and doesn't affect what happens, you know, in your hobbies, et cetera, et cetera. And that's a cute myth. It's just not true. The fact is that there are no walls, that every part touches every other part.
Right.
Because you are one integrated person. And to live a life of integrity means that you are allowing everything to touch everything else.
Yeah.
And that's what it sounds like you're describing.
It's very similar, I think. I just, my life, like, I chose to have a bunch of kids. Like, if I was not making them a priority, like, I don't know why I'm having a bunch of them and having another one, like, in February. So it's like, why?
Congratulations. That's awesome.
Thank you. But man, and I mean, it's different. I think it's different when you're a parent. Like, I get lucky to have all those experiences with five different kids, and especially my daughter now, she's 1.5, and like, man, she is the best. Like, I spend so much time with her, like in the mornings, like, you know, sometimes I won't have anything till like 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and we just like hang out and like, just like, it's my favorite age. And, I don't know, like, I mean, you get older and like things are more important to you. Like, that's more important to me than like cramming my calendar full from, you know, 9 a.m. to whatever. Like, I'll get up, I'll do my stuff, you know, my workout, my stretch, my meditation, all my stuff that I do. And then I'll help the kids will get up, and the kids on the bus. And then like, I'll just hang out, like, do stuff for the wife, help around the house, do whatever. And then, you know, maybe I have a call at 10, maybe I have a call at 11, maybe I don't have a call till 2 in there. Maybe I don't have any calls that day. And like, and then I have to kind of like pull myself into work and be like, here's some lead generation and some prospecting stuff you need to do, and here's some whatever. So it just, yeah, it's just very natural, and it's kind of terrifying if you let it be, like, you know what I mean? Like, some people would be very scared, I think, of that existence. But it's working, so I'm just rolling with it.
And I think that's key. You know, is this creating a life that you love? Is this adding value to the people in your family? The people who matter most. I mean, one day somebody else is going to sit in the chair you sit in at work.
Right.
Then what? You know, then what? What are the relationships going to be like with the people who matter most to you? And it sounds like you're prioritizing those. And that matters. You mentioned a minute ago the discipline that you have in different parts of your life, because even in what may seem to some like a very fluid thing that just kind of moves and ebbs and flows, you've got discipline and you've got structure. And you touched on that just a second ago with your morning routine. I'd love for you to share that and talk about that a little bit, because I think people really appreciate learning from somebody who has that type of discipline?
I can tell you, I feel like I don't have enough. I feel like I struggle with it. And I feel like, I mean, on paper, I know that I do. And like, I know, but I just constantly feel like I should be, you know, like a to-do list is my best friend and my worst enemy. Like, I had to, I met this guy, Greg Shepherd, recently, like probably one of the most incredible people I've ever met. And he's like super successful. He's done all these different things. Like, we kind of just like hit it off on the podcast and like became really good friends. And then we talk all the time. And he was like, well, what are your objectives for the day? And it was, you know, it's like 6 o'clock in the morning, whatever we're talking. And I'm like, I have a to-do list, but I didn't have an objectives list. And, you know, you hear like some people do like the rock thing where like they have like the big rock of stuff they're going to work on. And they have like the little things. I would just load up my to-do list with like a million things. And then I would be like annoyed that I didn't get most of them done. And like stuff would come up and I wouldn't do a bunch. And then it just got to be where it's like this big, it was like a backlog of like software development where you just like, you don't want to look at it anymore. There's just so much stuff on it. It really, really helped recently to just have an objective list. It's like a punch list of like the most important things, because you can trick yourself, I think, into thinking things are important that aren't, right? Like you can definitely convince yourself that you have 75 things to do today, like every day you wake up. But like, if you really, really think about it and you're like, what would define success or failure for this day?
Yes.
Then you can probably distill it down to some personal stuff that you need to do, some family stuff you need to do, and some work stuff you need to do.
Yeah.
And like, there's probably, you know, some days there's more stuff on there than others, but like, you probably have a couple tasks on each of those. And I don't think, you know, I don't think that I have it honed in yet, but I definitely think that abstracting at a level and not trying to be so granular certainly helps. And it's an interesting thing at the end of the day to look and have knocked off, you know, 9 out of 10, as opposed to 10 out of 100, because you're like, those were the most important things, you know, like the annoying shit you don't want to do. Like there's stuff you don't want to do, right? There's just stuff you don't want to do. That's probably the most important stuff. That's like another cliche thing, but like renewing our health insurance for the year, my least favorite task of the entire 12 months, right? Yeah. It stays on my list. But then I realized like that is a objective. That is something I hate having to do. I have to do it and it has to go on the list. And I just have to knock it out. I don't care if that's the only thing I do today. Like, I'm going to do this very important thing. And then you just kind of add the other things around it. So yeah, I feel like I'm disciplined. The morning wake up thing, it's all, I mean, that's a routine, right? I mean, everybody talks about routines. I don't think you can get into a routine for everything. But my morning routine of getting up early, working out, stretch, meditate, that is a very grounding kind of thing. And the days that I do that, I feel like I could run through a brick wall. The days that I don't, I feel like, you know, a brick wall fell on me. Like, you just don't feel the same. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, I think I'm super disciplined in some areas, but I'm still growing and trying to learn like how to get more done in a day, but also feel accomplished at the end of the day. It's not about just doing stuff. It's about doing the stuff that matters. Yeah. So that's, again, a work in progress.
And I love that transparency. I mean, I think that's authentic to who we all are. You know, I mean, anybody who just says, oh, I've got everything going right in every area of my life, just look at my highlight reel on Instagram.
Right.
You know, I mean, like that's not real.
I know it's not, but even I think I've been so programmed that I still feel like there's some like magical formula, or like some people do have it all figured out. Like, is there anybody that really does? Because I feel like in my head there is, but maybe not.
Not that I've ever met.
I haven't met him either. If either one of us meet him, we'll have to introduce.
Absolutely. We'll introduce him around. That's
yes.
It.
Yes.
I had a counselor tell me many years ago, and I've shared this with so many clients over the years. She said, you use the word should a lot. She said, you need to stop shoulding all over yourself.
I like that.
Never forgotten that. Because, man, that's that voice, one of the voices in your head, you know, that's just like, well, you should be. Well, why aren't you doing this? Well, you should be. You should be farther along. You should be doing, what kind of a person, parent, spouse are you? You should be.
Right.
You got to be careful with that.
What did you replace it with? What did you replace should with?
I want to do the right things, right? And so what, and that's a different trap, by the way. You can make this such an object of, it's got to be perfect.
Right.
The perfect becomes the enemy of getting anything done. But really, it becomes like, okay, instead of saying I should be, what's the next right step? What's the next right action I need to take?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if you're familiar with David Allen's getting things done system.
I don't think so.
I've been using that since 2006 when I first read his book. I just interviewed him for the podcast not long ago. And just a brilliant thinker around productivity. The thing I like the most about it is it's not about a specific tool. It's not about a specific, you got to do this planner or this software. No. It's a methodology.
Right.
And it's about uncovering exactly what you just described, thinking at a different level. What are the most important things? What are the things that would make today a win?
Mm-hmm.
What if when I go to bed tonight, what are the things that I'm going to say, hey, I'm so glad I got those done. I feel great about this day.
Right.
What are those things? You determine those things. You pre-decide. You predetermine. You don't wait till the moment, because in the moment we make terrible decisions.
Right.
You pre-decide.
I like
and
that.
It's made such a difference in my life, and it has really helped me to tackle the should monster that is ever present between my ears.
Yes, the should monster. I like that. You don't want to should your pants. That's for sure.
That's so true. You lead a team now of 60 plus people. You know, that's not easy. And I watch a whole lot of entrepreneurs crash and burn when it comes to hiring and retaining good talent. Like, that's hard. How do you do that? How do you find the right people that fit in your organization, that fit on your bus, to use Jim Collins terminology? How do you find the right people? And how do you retain them over time?
I think the simple answer is, I just treat them like human beings. I have always said I pay well for good work. People don't have to work for me. I'm very lucky to have anyone that wants to work with me. There's no magical formula. Like, if you're a likable person, which usually means you're a genuine person, and you're a leader, I don't think it's that hard to get people to want to work with you initially. And, you know, if you're there to support them when they have problems, or you go to bat for them, you know, if there's client issues or whatever. I mean, everything, again, goes back to me. Like, it's my fault, not their fault. I think just, you know, paying them a good wage, treating them like good people, training them, wanting to see them succeed. And there's a bunch of stuff we do that's like not normal stuff. Like, one of our employees in the Philippines, husband went to the hospital, and like, we figured out how to like get meals to them over there, because she was having to like cook for all the kids and the family. And like, I don't even like telling that story, because it's not the point of like why we did it. It was just like, that's just an example of like how we try to think as an organization. It's like, somebody's struggling, man. Like, they work for you. They're part of your team. Like, I don't know. We're small enough that we can do that. I mean, I would like to think like as big as we ever get, like, we'll be able to do that. You know, I don't think Walmart like level would really care if somebody was struggling or suffering or whatever. Yeah. But you know, we're at the right size where we can do things like that. So I think just treating people, you know, to use the old cliche from when you're a kid, like how you want to be treated.
Yeah.
Is, I think that's been our biggest win. It's just like, people like to work here. It's like a, you know, it's a simple thing, but like, a lot of people don't like to work other places, and it's usually because of the way the company's run. So we try to make it a very friendly family environment where people can feel like they're supported and, you know, their employer cares about them.
I think that is the secret formula. I think treating people like actual 3D human beings instead of like cogs in the machine.
Yeah.
Is so important. And that's what it sounds like you do.
I try. Again, it's always learning, right?
Yeah.
Learn the things to do.
That's it. That's it. Jay, you know, you're not the same leader you were 5 years ago. You know, you've grown, you've learned. And a year from now, 5 years from now, your company and your team are going to need you to be a different leader than you are today. What do you do? How do you continue to level up? How do you stay on top of your game as a leader?
Great question. I think it is, I mean, obviously, learning business, you know, skills and like that, you know, career level stuff where learning how to be a better leader, you know, through constant career growth for me and being, you know, how do I get better as the CEO of a software testing agency? But I think it's really just, it's personal growth, right? I mean, it's what it is. Like, you're not like, you have to be a better person, like away from your team, away from whoever.
Yeah.
And like, that's the person you bring back to your company and your team. So I think it's really just continuing to work on my self-discipline, and just keep growing, my listening skills and like the way that I process and react to information. So I think it's personal growth is the only way to get better at, like, not like going to a, you know, I don't know, like a business clinic or like, you know, some sort of like, some taking classes on being a leader or whatever, like really wouldn't be for me. Yeah. For me, it's the personal side of things. Cause that, again, like you said, I mean, it's all mixed together for me, so I'm different than other people, but, yeah, I think just constantly trying to be a better human being, makes me a better leader, which is how it's worked so far as like improving where I've come from and where I'm going to. So I think I'll just keep, you know, trying to grow myself.
Absolutely. And that's, I think the focus is intentionality.
Right.
You know, you understand, you realize that it's not just going to happen. You're not going to wake up 5 years from now and magically have become a better leader.
Right.
And have the skills that you're going to need then.
Yeah.
You're going to have to start building those now.
Yeah.
Have you given thought to what you want your legacy to be?
I have been asked this question before. Not really, man. I try and then I'm like, the earth is going to get incinerated in like 3 billion years by the sun. So like, if you don't do something that can outlast that, then like, I don't know what you're doing. Right. I mean, and I say that like jokingly, but I literally, like, I do mean it. Like, I don't know, like, are you going to do something that like future generations that live on Mars or some other planet or solar system or whatever, like, is going to remember or do? Maybe. So I don't know. I don't know what it's going to be yet. I mean, I think in the short term, it's to raise kids that could be in those generations and contribute to those generations. I think that's the easy answer for a dad. But yeah, I don't know yet. I don't know what it is. Like, I don't know what lasting, like really lasting impact, right? I mean, even like the most famous guys in history today probably are not going to be remembered, like, you know, a million years from now or whatever. It's like, who are those people? I don't know. So I'm still in the search for, you know, like I said, the real short-term answer is being the best dad I can, so I raise the best kids I can, and maybe they go on to do really great things or just be great people, and I'll be happy with that.
You know, one of my mentors says that your greatest contribution to the world may not be something you do.
Yeah.
It may be someone you raise.
Yeah. That's true. That's true. That's a goal for sure. Raise good humans.
I think that's a good goal for all of us as parents. You have learned from a lot of different people over time. Is there a book that has made a big difference in your journey that you would recommend everybody listening that they add to their to read list?
Yes. The Dale Carnegie, How to Win Friends, I think is an incredible book.
That's great.
And then The Magic of Thinking Big, I think by David Schwartz, was another one that I read that I really liked. I'd kind of read those in order. I'd read that one first and then the Dale Carnegie book, because The Magic of Thinking Big is like very like old timey, but it's very much just like, you know, it's the precursor to like a lot of the, they're all, by the way, all those books are recycled. Like every book is recycled. Like every 5 to 10 years, every business book is just like the same stuff. Like it goes back to like, you trace it back to like JCPenney's books, like back in the '60s, like it's all the same stuff. But, yeah, I think those two would be my biggest recommendations. Those made a huge impact. I still think about the Dale Carnegie book like probably 5 times a week when I'm getting ready to say something stupid or like argue with my wife or like do something. I'm just like, it's not, you know, it's not worth it. Just shut up and just, you know, move on.
Yeah, that's a good word. You know, when it comes to an argument with your wife, even if you win.
Oh, no, that's the biggest thing I ever learned. There's no, you're not, if you win, you didn't win. That's the real thing. If you win, you lose. That's a very, very true statement for sure.
You know, often, Jay, people are going to walk away from an episode like this with one big idea. If you could define what you want that one big idea to be, what would you say?
Start a business or consult or do something that, you know, you can kind of define what your day-to-day life looks like. I think being stuck in the 9-to-5 is a very antiquated concept a lot of times, and people just fall into that trap. And like, I mean, look, if you're a doctor, you're a lawyer, whatever, you got to kind of go into the system and do your thing. But in the tech world, you probably can figure something out based on your experience or go to, you know, boot camp or learn something. Like you can do something to get a consulting gig. Yeah, just find another source of income that's not just a 9-to-5. I think that's my biggest thing to share with anybody.
Awesome. I know folks are going to want to stay connected with you, Jay, and continue to learn from you. What is the best way for them to do that?
LinkedIn. Jay Agner, AIGNER, or JDAQA.com if you want to check us out.
Love that. I really appreciate your honesty and transparency today, Jay. You have shared so much insight from your journey so far. Thank you for that.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me on, man.
Thanks for joining me for this episode today. As we wrap up, I'd love for you to do two things. First, subscribe to this podcast so you don't miss an episode. And if you find value here, I'd love it if you would rate it and review it. That really does make a difference in helping other people to discover this podcast. Second, if you don't have a copy of my newest book, Catalytic Leadership, I'd love to put a copy in your hands. If you go to catalyticleadershipbook.com, you can get a copy for free. Just pay the shipping so I can get it to you and we'll get one right out. My goal is to put this into the hands of as many leaders as possible. This book captures principles that I've learned in 20 plus years of coaching leaders in the entrepreneurial space, in business, government, nonprofits, education, and the local church. You can also connect with me on LinkedIn to keep up with what I'm currently learning and thinking about. And if you're ready to take a next step with a coach to help you intentionally grow and thrive as a leader, I'd be honored to help you. Just go to catalyticleadership.net to book a call with me. Stay tuned for our next episode next week. Until then, as always, leaders, choose to be catalytic.
Thanks for listening to Catalytic Leadership with Dr. William Attaway. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss the next episode. Want more? Go to catalyticleadership.net.